Two people mm-hmm. open a tea shop, serving muffins and tea. One puts extra jam, beautiful custard or whatever on his, at the risk of making less profit at the end of the month. Which one do you think will attract a bigger crowd? Generosity is a huge key to success. Be kind and be generous to your patients.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Secrets to Success. I just want to start by saying a huge thanks to all of you who have subscribed and all of you that are tuned in right now. The first few episodes we have done have thousands of downloads, so I'm hugely grateful that you're taking the time out of your day to invest in yourself for personal growth and success. As you know, I'm always fascinated by people's meaningful experiences, unique perspectives and backgrounds, and today's guest is someone I'm so excited to introduce to you. I've been following him for an extremely long time, and this gentleman is absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't seen his work yet, you're in for a real treat, as he is probably the most popular and eloquent speaker that I know. He speaks in four different languages and has given hundreds of keynote lectures in over 50 countries. His name is Dr. Miguel Stanley. He's the clinical director of the White Clinic, which is probably the most advanced dental clinic in all of Europe. Using state-of-the-art technology, software, materials, and a strong sense of ethics that involve his two concepts, no half smiles and slow dentistry. He's also the host of the first ever National Geographic documentary on dentistry, proving that technology can shape the future of this profession. Dr. Miguel Stanley, it's an absolute pleasure to sit down with you again. Thank you so much for your time.
Channa, man, you humble me with your introduction. Thank you so much. Big fan of your work as well. Congrats on the podcast. You've got a keen eye for aesthetic and for storytelling, and I have all the time in the world for you, my friend. So what are we going to talk about today?
Thank you. You know, I hear you speak all the time. I listen to everything that you do. Recently,
thank you.
Dr. Crutchman, I know that my audience is going to love and learn so much from you. And I also feel so much reassurance and confidence that the way I'm impacting dentistry is right. Because, you know, based on all your research, based on all your hard work and your movements, I know for a fact that, you know, this is the right way to do it. And more importantly, more than what you're doing, the way you do it is just so graceful and impactful. And I'm just really excited for this conversation and for all of our listeners to tune in and learn some more.
I'm excited too. Let's get into it.
So one of the first things I wanted to go into was, what was so formative about your younger years to who you are today? What experiences that formed you to have the great resilience that you have? I know we're going to touch into your story in a bit more detail later on, but I know you've got an amazing brother that's really advised you through your hard times. But what experiences did you go through when you were younger that made you so resilient and strong?
Well, I was born in South Africa in 1973. I have a British mother, a Portuguese father. I have an older brother, younger brother, and an older sister. And I grew up in, you know, when you grow up, you don't really know where you're growing up. You just grow up, you know. We had thanks to what was a horrible regime, you know, we lived in a nice area, a nice neighborhood. So I grew up in quite a magical environment in Africa, but in a horrible dropback. You know, apartheid was a horrific system. So when I was nine, my father decided that we had to leave and just come back to Portugal. So I guess that leaving my, you know, everything, your whole entire universe as a child. And we actually came by boat from South Africa to Portugal, a sailboat. My father was in the Navy for many years, and it wasn't a fancy boat. It was a small floating caravan with no technology on it. And we came, it took us almost a year because we sailed around, you know, went to Brazil and the Caribbean.
Wow.
And so I think two things there. One, that journey with my family, concentrated just, you know, there was no technology. We're just playing music, singing, very wholesome experience to be with your family and to see your own father take, at the time you don't think it's a risk, you think it's normal. You think that that is normal. I mean, my wife, my friends are like, my God, your dad was crazy. I'm now a father. I don't know if I could do that that way. But, you know, such an exceptional experience. But I guess the second thing was to just leave everything and to go to a completely new environment. I arrived in Portugal. I didn't speak Portuguese. I had to rapidly learn how to speak a language, a new language, new friends, new everything, new food, new, you know, and at a young age. And anybody that's an immigrant will understand what that's like, you know, just complete tectonic shift. And with that said, I think that having to adapt fast, because had I been 16, like my sister probably had a harder time adapting because she was already 16, 17. So, you know, and I was full of the capacity for neuroplasticity and for, you know, just completely absorbed by that experience. So, you know, learning how to not be scared and learning how to adapt fast, I think those two things really were foundational, and plus the love of my family, you know. So had I had those two things but come from a broken home, might not have been easy. I mean, I don't come from a rich family. I have no doctors in the family. I didn't have a head up. I didn't have, you know, oh, you're guaranteed a job or a position. I didn't have any of that. But I guess love of a family, and yeah, those three things I think really were foundational to me today.
Thank you. That's great. As in, I think, you know, sometimes I think, especially in our younger years, more than money and more than, you know, people, our parents putting dollars into it to get us, you know, fancy education, they give us love and time, like you said, the experience that helps a lot more than those finer things.
I mean, look, you, for example, you went to study in Spain, right? And
yeah,
and now
yeah,
you, so you've had a lot of hardship in also getting your education, having to live in Spain, learning a different language, different culture, being away from your friends and family. And I don't think it's a coincidence, and it's not because you're good looking, that you are now doing what you're doing, because, you know, it's all of these adventures are learning experiences and they set you apart. So you left your comfort zone, and that's part of success, is having that capacity to leave your comfort zone. So, you know, it was Mike Tyson that said, you know, every good plan works until you get punched in the face. And life is about getting punched in the face. And I think that too many people are really scared of failing, or scared of getting hurt, or scared, you know. And so you, like myself, you know, you went to different countries learning things, and then all of a sudden, you know, that's not easy, and that's it's sad, and you miss your friends, and you miss, you know, so you have to adapt, and that's the beginning of becoming powerful.
Of course. Wow, beautifully put. I also read, you know, with that as well, I read that you were a really good student. You were one that was constantly asking questions. I even saw that, you know, you were mildly dyslexic, but actually led you to have an advantage because you had a photographic memory, which, you know, really helps in the field of medicine and dentistry.
Damn, man, you've done your homework. I'm impressed. Yeah, I have to thank my mom for that. So my mom's from Manchester in the UK. I'm actually a quarter Irish because my British grandmother was from County Cork. It's all redheads. And she's a very open person. She's very expressive, very communicative. And I guess I was always taught just to, you know, never be scared to ask questions and to, you know, and I think I owe that to her. And when I was in university, I wouldn't rest until, you know, this and this and this happens because of that. And I'd be like, why, you know? And back then there wasn't social media, there wasn't Instagram, but more importantly, internet had nothing, it didn't exist. So if you wanted to get that little bit of information, your teacher would either give it to you, you'd have to go to, you know, books were very expensive. Dental libraries didn't exist in Portugal. So I'd be damned if I wasn't gonna get an answer. And of course, because I was thinking of the question, when I got the information, that click was a lot more valuable than just reading it in a book quickly. So I think, you know, don't be scared to ask questions. And, you know, I think more important than that, actually be curious. you know. So without a doubt, I loved studying. I was I always had fun, and I loved learning. I still do today. I try and oblige myself to keep my brain active and to learn something new every day, and not just learn it, to apply it. And sometimes mm-hmm. when you do that, and if you've understood the processes of neuroplasticity, or if you look at Daniel, I think, I forget his last name, but it's called Think Fast, Think Slow. When you want, so the think fast part of your brain usually is superficial, and then the think slow part of your brain is more deep, and it's more ingrained. And you have to work your brain, you know, and if you want to actually transform your knowledge, you really have to cultivate the desire to learn. And I think asking questions and being humble enough to change when you learn something better for you is very, very important.
So touching with that then, what would you say nowadays? Obviously, we have a lot of technology, a lot of stuff that's online now. Is the best way for younger dentists to come about and learn? I know you, Dr. Coachman as well, put out a lot of content online. For younger dentists who are looking to improve their clinical skills and, you know, get more up-to-date things, what's the best way?
I recently gave two webinars to different student bodies. One, the International Association of Dental Students, which is present in over 67 countries. And I've been lecturing for them since 1950s. Yeah. And any young dental students should be a part of that organization because it's quite universal in terms of the mindset. And then I spoke the following week to King's College of London dental students. That was last week, I believe. And one thing I find when I speak to UK dentists is that they're very insular, meaning they're only looking at what's happening in the UK, probably because, you know, they're getting ready to hit the NHS and understand how to navigate their way out of the NHS into private practice to become rich. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't be the goal. What should be the goal of a student is A, learn biology, learn dentistry, learn medicine, learn physiology, learn dental materials. I follow some Facebook pages in the UK and around the world. I don't interact, but I just, because it's like a benchmark of what's happening out there. And I'm actually quite appalled with the level of knowledge of some graduate dentists already. Just the questions they ask, how do I treat this or how do I treat that? And I'm like, oh my God, what are they teaching these people today? So your question is very pertinent in the sense that perhaps people aren't getting the due level of education at university, which I think is quite sad, because graduating with a license to actually interact in a human being's anatomy for profit, with only, you know, a few hours of clinical expertise and underprepared in terms of scientific understanding of what it means to be a dentist, and then having to, you know, spend even more money on postgraduate training when some people want to start mitigating the investment in school by starting to work straight away. It's a very dangerous time. You know, so my heart goes out to the young dentists that, you know, are making ends meet to finish their school. But be very careful of your first years to not jump straight into a relationship that's only about making money or celebrity. That's nothing to do with dentistry. Dentistry is about healing your patient in a sacred bond of trust. And if you're going to interact, so... sorry for the long answer, but it's quite important to set the foundation for the answer. So definitely be curious, not about who's a famous dentist, but who's actually teaching. So for example, there's a few websites out there, DentalXP, www.dentalxp.com, which was founded by some of my mentors, Team Atlanta, Ronald Goldstein, Maurice Salama, Henry Salama, David Garber. There's a lot of online content there. Freemium stuff. You've also got a lot of good stuff with Drew Shah's Dentinal Tubules. Big shout out to Drew Shah and all of his efforts. The guy's one of the hardest working people I know. And of course, you know, you're never a hero close to home, you know, but outside of the UK, the guy's got a lot of respect and a lot of people have a lot of respect for what he's done. So I think people should just pay attention to what they're doing. and try and not go for the courses that are just reputed to be good. But there's so much free content on YouTube. I mean, you've got doctors in Romania, in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Latin America, in Brazil, that put up content free on their YouTube channels and it has an amazing quality and consistency. But you also have to know what to look for, if you know what I'm saying. So for the young dentist out there, don't look for quick fixes. Look for science and facts, and you'll be a lot more successful in the future.
Thank you. One of the things I also wanted to touch up with you then, as your time as a student, something I really relate to is when I finished dental school, I had a lot of friends I studied with. Their parents had, you know, already state-of-the-art dental clinics for them to come join, or they had, you know, uncles, aunties, their dad had things to pass down to them. I didn't have any of that. I had to obviously go into the working world, graft from the bottom and build myself up, which I know that is something you did as well. I read that you had a similar type of experience. How are you able to go from graduating to get yourself into the position you are in today?
Hard work, luck, timing, persistence. So when I graduated, nobody would give me a job because there weren't that many dental clinics back in 1998. And of course, most of the students of my year graduated into the roles that, you know, their parents or their family offices or so on and so forth. You know, what did I have? I had my self-confidence, which actually wasn't self-confidence. It was more just hunger. And I got a job. I saw a job offer in a newspaper. For those of you that don't know, it's the, I'm joking. In a newspaper, a print newspaper. And I got a job 400 miles from my home in the south of Portugal in the Algarve, which is a very strong expat English community. And quite frankly, the only strength I had was the fact that I spoke English. So I went there for a job interview with a South African dentist who had a German endodontist and a British implant surgeon. And I joined the ranks as the junior restorative dentist. And I spent 2.5 years working with those guys. I'm very grateful for that experience, but I had to leave my friends and family and live in a small little apartment. It wasn't easy. And then every time I'd come up to Lisbon, I would visit I had a connection that introduced me to a professor who was like 65 or 70. And a perio professor, and he had a really outdated practice that was set up in the 70s and they hadn't changed anything. So the technology was from the 70s.
Wow.
And I would basically offer my services, let me come and work for you. No. So like basically every 2 months when I'd come up, I'd offer to work for free. No. You know, nowadays kids, when I interview them, they're like, how much are you gonna pay me? That's the first question. How many days off do I get? That's the second question. When will I be famous? That's the third question. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
So I was like, how can I, you know, I'll work for free. I'll cook your food. I'll do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And so finally, after like 2 years of persistence, at the end of 1999, he offered to sell me his practice. And he said, oh, I've got 2,000 patients. And I borrowed some money from the bank. My brother helped me with a bank loan. But he said, you know, you don't fail. And I had no idea what I was doing, John. Nothing. I had no idea what I was doing. Everything was just like in my head, what could go wrong? And I guess I inherited that from planning with my father back, you know, on the boat trip. Like, you know, you'd prepare for things, you know, you'd need supplies, you'd think ahead, you understand? And that thinking, I guess, you know, everything in life's a lesson, programming from birth, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I started my little practice, and since I, you know, it ended up not being 2,000 patients, it was like 20, but I gave really good service and I was very nice. And I started practicing slow dentistry in the very beginning. Now, for the British dentists out there in Portugal, there's no NHS. It's 100% private. And mm-hmm. some dentists will work with insurance companies, but they take a cut on their fee in order to get patients referred to them. I never worked with insurance companies. So since 1999, I've been 100% private. And I just grew slowly, very insecure. And because I was so insecure of failing or not being able to pay mortgage or rent, I went very slowly, but I did exceptional dentistry from day one. And doing exceptional dentistry from day one, as I was taught and classically trained, and in the meantime, I took a postgrad in implant surgery, and I took another postgrad in cosmetic dentistry. So I have training in cosmetic dentistry and, you know, prosthodontics and implant surgery at the end of the century, last century. So that preparation allowed me to slowly build a little name for myself. And there's no way I was rushing. Probably only after 5 years did I start making some money where I could think about, you know, buying a new car or something like that, you know. So, yeah, it was long. It took a long time. It wasn't fast.
Well, okay. I mean, that's why people always look at you and think successful. How did it happen so big, so quick? But then obviously what you're saying, it does take a lot of time to be able to get to that stage.
Yeah. And everybody, nobody out there made it fast straight away. Nobody. I mean, unless they inherited it or won the lottery or something, or cutting corners or something. But, you know, you mentioned a few names, you know, like Apper and Coachman. These guys, there's a few more amazing guys out there, but it's not just that they're successful. It's that they're consistently successful year after year after year after year after year. You know, some people you'll hear about them, they're a big name back in 2015 and you never hear about them again because consistency. And you can think like why, like a musician, for example. Like the other day I was talking with my wife, Dido. Do you remember that woman, Dido? But, you know, she was huge. You couldn't, never heard from her again, right?
Yeah.
Maybe she retired living off her amazing royalties, I'm sure. And then you've got bands like Coldplay that are continuously, or Pink Floyd, that are always putting out music. You know, that's really hard to keep that high level consistency over the years, you know, like it or not. That takes a lot of effort. And in dentistry, you only get to keep at that level as a speaker, as a key opinion leader with companies, and as a private practitioner, if you are ethical and consistently keeping the levels high, do you understand? Because any dentist can hire a team of people that can do marketing. I'm gonna hire a PR firm, and you can get, you know, interviews in magazines, and you can do this, and you can do that. With a good PR firm, you can do magic. Mm-hmm. But can you sustain it over years and years and years? And that's the one thing people should start looking at.
Well, yeah, as in, that's what this podcast is about, you know, to invite people like yourself who consistently be able to produce good quality dentistry and consistently always, you know, keep up to the level of success that you have. And one of the things that really inspired me about you, how we say in the UK, we call you two-time, because you weren't only successful once, but you were successful, had your hardships and came back and was successful again. And after, I think, Anthony Joshua, the boxer, coined this term called two-time.
I like that, two-time. Two-time, yeah, because first time could be lucky, second time, hard work, you know? it's amazing.
But talk me through that then. So, you know, obviously you put a lot of years in to be able to become initially successful.
So, look, again, people should listen to that Christian Coachman podcast because he was kind enough to interview me. I was actually the first guy of his, I think, of his second season of Coffee with Coachman. And basically, I spoke a little bit about I built a very big practice back in 2008 because I had a TV show in Portugal. Let me be specific here. It was the first ever makeover show, primetime TV makeover show in any country where dentistry was the focus, not plastic surgery.
Okay.
Because all the makeover shows back in 2005, 2006, 2007, the plastic surgeon was the star. Because I was executive producer, dentistry was the star. So, and moreover, in most of the shows, it was veneers or bleaching or bonding, which you can do in a session, right? Or two sessions, let's say two or three sessions max. So cosmetic dentistry, I was doing implant dentistry. So we had 6 months production time. So it was by far the very first makeover show that included dental implants and its restorative component. On primetime TV. And in Portugal in 2006, people thought that dentists were about dentures, extractions, and fillings. And here I am coming on TV talking about full comprehensive smile makeovers with implants and crowns and veneers and occlusion and aesthetics and ceramics. And so needless to say, my practice exploded. And that TV show wasn't given to me. I worked for it. I had a history doing TV show, sorry, doing TV commercials as a model in the 90s to pay for my university and all. So everything adds up. Plus being very nice to everybody, being very nice to people all the time. So I guess that, you know, when they asked around how I'd been, I was quite successful at it and I'd learned how to do TV shows. Everything paid off. So my practice just blew up. We were making a lot of money back in the, 2006, 2007, 2008. And I thought, hey, let's do an amazing clinic. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a little thing I haven't spoken about publicly. At that time, there was quite a successful dentist in Portugal, Paulo Maló, who had created this all-in-four concept and this huge clinic, like nine stories, this huge thing. And, you know, clinics all over the world, a huge thing. And I was looking at that, and I'm like, man, if he can do that, I can do that, right? And that's one of the reasons why I did a big jump, and I built a comprehensive practice, the second white clinic, purposely built. But it had plastic surgery. It was 3,000 square meters, the whole thing. Training academy. It had, check it out, besides dentistry, 14 dental chairs, operation theater, max fac, nutritionist, plastic surgeon, hair transplant unit, spa, kitchen, psychologist, personal gymnasium, like a gym for personal. And the idea was to do what we were doing on the TV shows, complete body makeovers, to do this in a physical one-stop shop location. And I built it in 2008. Till today, nothing on earth has ever existed like that again. I think that I would have been successful, but what happened in 2009 was the subprime in America, the financial collapse of the market. So between 2009 and 2012, Europe just financially collapsed, right? But so maybe that would have affected my business. But to make things worse, my accountant stole all of my money. So he embezzled everything. Had fraudulently written, just fake documents and all of this, and I was a dentist. What did I know? So one day they just turned off the tap. I was like, what? What do you mean I've got no money? Anyway, he got a 5-year jail sentence, suspended because, blue collar crime or whatever. Never paid back a penny, never did a day in jail, but that's, that it is what it is. But the long story there is that I lost my business and I had to start again from scratch at 39, 40. And then I had help from my family. They said, look, you're too big to fail. It's like, and I hadn't failed as a surgeon. I hadn't failed as a doctor. My patients were happy. Everything was going well. I was one of the world's biggest speakers back then. I was lecturing all over the world. I just published a book. I was coming out with a new TV show. So like to not have a physical location to do this would be nuts. So we got started from scratch in 2011. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's where you said two time.
Yeah, two time.
So yeah, and if anybody wants to just look into this, what saved me was ethics and just doing proper dentistry. You don't come back from something like that if you're not good at what you do. Do you understand? You don't. Much like a prize fighter that, loses his title fight, you were using Anthony Joshua. So if you lose your title and you're strong enough, you go back to the drawing board, you work out, you become stronger, you get your brain in the right place and you come back and you win that title, So only quitters quit.
Of course. That takes a lot of drive from you as well. As in, obviously, when you got to, that stage in your life, you had two options where you fall, wanted to risk it all and started to build it all again, all from scratch, or to just walk away. And, I'm sure you've had a nice life if you didn't choose to go after this anyway. Yeah. So what was it that made you think, this isn't it for Dr. Miguel Stanley. I want to come back and be even better than I was before.
Hindsight's always 20/20, and I could probably romanticize the answer. I didn't know how to do anything else.
Okay.
I didn't want to go work for anybody else.
Okay.
I hadn't done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting with my brother, who's always been a mentor of mine, and he said, look, you reached you reached the peak, you reached the top of Everest, and you're now back, you know, now you're back at base camp. What are you going to do? You know, or you almost didn't reach the peak. You almost reached the peak, right? And now you're back at base camp. What are you going to do? You're going to pack up your stuff and go back home and say, oh, I almost did it. Or are you going to, you know, focus and get back up and do it? You know, and not many people have the mental fortitude or the bandwidth to accept defeat. And again, let's go back to me as a kid, 2000, you know, I'm 10 years old. I've arrived in a country. I don't speak the language. I'm being bullied because I can't speak the language. And literally, I got my ass kicked by the kids in the neighborhood because I didn't know how to speak Portuguese. I mean, here I am, this freak speaking this weird language, English with a strong, thick South African accent. And yeah, you know, so that resilience, I guess. And not everybody is a fighter, Jana. Not everybody's a fighter. You know, some people like to be in the audience watching the prize fighter. Some people like, you know, and everybody would like to be a Champions League winning football player, but only some actually are. You know, other people, no matter how much they try, they're always in the, what do you call the second league? Yeah, you call it the, what do you call it? Anyway, they're like, they're not Premier League players, no matter how much they try and how much they train, you know? So I guess, look, I just had it in me, man. And I was too young to quit, you know? So I'm just really grateful for all of the good people that that helped me the second time around. And just to finish that up, in the last decade, all I've been focusing on is reputation and not profit. So if people want to see why I'm this guy today and how I have a message and why I do the things that I do, pay attention to what I say and how I say it and what I show on my Instagram. I'm never, ever, I don't know if I do it, but I try and be as inclusive as possible. You shouldn't be limited to be successful based on the color of your skin, your gender, your demographic, your religion, your faith, your ideals, because dentistry is the same for everybody. The foundations of it are biology, physics, mechanics, physiology, as you understand. And I want everybody around the world, you know, any young dentist that's about to start their career, to feel and identify that no matter what struggles they have, they too can reach the peak, they can reach the top of the mountain. But it's not cutting corners, right? And it's eliminating toxic people from your environment. It's believing in yourself. It's forgiving yourself. It's understanding that you're going to hit a brick wall every now and again and lose your front teeth. But guess what? There's implants and you can restore them. That's the metaphor, if you know what I'm saying. So no matter what beatings you take, if you've got your moral compass in the right place and you've got a good infrastructure around you at home with your friends, if you take care of your body and your mind and you rest and you're focused, you can win. You can do this.
That's great. And just touching on from then as what you said, obviously, you know, being two times become successful, this time around I noticed what you've done is be part of the bigger picture. You've kind of taken a step back and, you know, put some of the movements you're doing, the slow dentistry movement and the no hard smile movement. So I wanted to kind of get into that and I wanted to see how all of our listeners can practice the type of dentistry you're preaching with the slow dentistry movement. What are the four different types of points slow dentistry has, and how can our listeners get more involved with it?
I really appreciate the question. So first of all, no half smiles and slow dentistry are two registered trademarks. And they're concepts that I came up with. So first, no half smiles. And just to be clear, neither one or the other should ever be necessary. They became necessary because of what I was seeing in the market. So think of it this way, no half smiles, all right? And then we'll get into slow dentistry. A gardener is somebody who comes and takes care of a garden, okay? Now, if I was to ask you to define a gardener, you could say, yeah, you know, he fixes the grass, waters the flowers, plants the this and that. Now, how much time does that gardener going to spend in your garden? And if you were to say, hey, how much to fix my garden? The first question they'll say is, well, how big is your garden? And if you're really, really clever, you'll say, how many water access points do I have? What technology am I using? You know, how many trees do you have? What kind of trees do you have? Oh, man, that's too many questions. I just want to know how much it's going to cost to fix my garden. Now, as you grow, you know, when you're young, I'll fix your garden because there's some money there, right? But I'm no longer a gardener, and I stopped being a gardener when I did my TV shows. Why? Because I had so many patients wanting to be treated by me. I'm talking over 2,000 patients on a waiting list, right? Wanting to throw bags of cash at me to have full mouth restorative dentist. So if I had 10 new patients a day, I had a team taking care of that. Three wanted to do full mouth dentistry, and the other seven wanted to do just the central. Which patients do you think I accepted? Right? So what happened was that I started only doing the full arch cases. Now, yeah. You could say that, you could argue that, oh, well, it's easy because you had a lot of patients. I don't have a lot of patients. I got to accept the little stuff. But here's the punchline. The patients that did everything, that when they left the clinic, their transformation was so much bigger that had a bigger impact in their friends and family. And I started getting patients coming from referrals rather than the TV shows. And then I said, well, hang on, that's amazing. And moreover, they knew how much the patients had spent. Wow. So not only do they know exactly what the patient spent for full arch, but they wanted it as well. And that's where I understood that full arch dentistry. So what kind of a dentist are you? I'm a full arch dentistry. I'm not a single tooth dentist. All right, there's a very big difference. Most of dentists would say, oh, I'm restorative, I'm cosmetic, I'm an orthodontist. I'm a full arch dentist. And the analogy of the gardener is that I'm a landscape architect.
Okay.
So I can garden, but it's all about sustainability and beauty. And, you know, so when I go into a garden, I want to understand the subsoil. I want to understand where the water's coming from, sprinkler systems, what kind of trees, so that once I build it, it lasts and it's sustainable. And if you think of that analogy in dentistry, and you're only, because you're, oh, but I only want to do one tooth. Well, perhaps it's the wrong client / patient. Maybe you need to go to the other dentist who's a gardener. No disrespect to gardeners, very necessary. I'm a landscape architect. Okay? Do you understand that? So I use this in my lectures many times, the transformative power of no, saying no, no. Oh, but I don't have money. Well, I understand that that's your problem, but it's not my problem. My problem is that I studied mechanics and physics and biology and physiology and dentistry, and I simply cannot do what you're asking me to do because it's beneath or not in sync with what I learned. Oh, but you're going to walk away from all of that money? Well, yeah, but there's a lot of dentists that would take that. I'm not that person. So the foundation of No Half Smiles is to, and you can, there's videos on my YouTube channel. Just go to Miguel Stanley, YouTube. You can watch it. But No Half Smiles is a really cool video, cartoon. It's to always do a treatment plan starting with the end. Function. So all your top teeth, all your bottom teeth in occlusion. The biology has to be sound, and last but not least, the aesthetics. So all the dentists that are just doing aesthetics, you're making mistakes. For example, please, doctor, I just want you to do the four front veneers or the social six, whatever. I have a wedding coming up. Yes, but do you know that you're missing the six back teeth on each side? Oh, yeah, yeah, but you can't see that. And I'll do that when I have a bit more money. So how much is an individual veneer or bonded session? Now, let's say it's £4,000 for six teeth, for example. The guy puts £4,000 in cash right in front of you. Let's just do it right now. And you look at that pile of crispy cash and you're like, damn it, man, there's my weekend in Ibiza right there. But guess what? If you actually studied restorative dentistry and you do not have posterior function and the vertical dimension, what's going to happen is a year later, those veneers are going to crack off or chip. There goes your reputation. There goes your consistency. There goes you being at the high level every day, all the time. And these are choices that you make. Saying no is very powerful. And that's the foundation of No Half Smiles. Now, in order to do this, you have to go slow. You have to not see 50 patients a day. I've heard reports in Malaysia of dentists. I gave a lecture for the international, for the Association of Malaysian Dentists. Some dentists seeing 100 patients a day. I've heard that on the NHS, some clinics are doing, patients are seeing patients every 15 minutes. So if you break down an 8-hour day, that's what, 30, 40 patients a day? Now, regardless of what that does to people's mental health, because when you interact with a stranger, it activates parts of your brain, fight or flight mode. It's, do I trust this person? And not only, you're not just having a conversation, you are now going to engage with their anatomy, their physics, their biology to get some money in a rush. Blah, I think that's really dangerous. So that shouldn't happen. You are not trained to work in a rush. You are not trained to do 60 patients a day, or perhaps you are, and that's the university's problem. Because the way I see it, dentists are trained to diagnose. Mm-hmm. To analyze, to diagnose, to do some critical thinking, come up with a treatment plan, material selection, choose the right tools and instruments, prepare the operatory, execute to the gold standard of the year in question, not of 1990s, and yes, to finalize. Yes. You can't do that in a rush. Yes. So we created slowdentistry.com. Very simple, slowdentistry.com. Anybody can visit the website. It is now currently a non-profit foundation based in Switzerland. Everybody working at Slow Dentistry is a volunteer. It's a non-for-profit organization, which I created and co-founded with my sister Nina, who's a teacher in Switzerland, and we gave it away, all right? So there's no way I'm making money from this, and it's regulated by the Swiss, you know, government. So it's a very, very highly regulated thing. And I wanted to do that because, you know, there's a lot of jealousy and envy and criticism in dentistry. So that's the one thing that I wanted to be pure. And the four cornerstones of Slow Dentistry are: one, have a signed valid consent to your patient, not just a document that is signed, but it talk to your patient and not delivered by a salesperson or a receptionist or whatever, but by the doctor that's going to interact with you. I'm going to do a class one restoration. There's a risk that it might go to root canal. And if you go to root canal, I'm going to have to do this and that, and it's going to cost this much, and then maybe this. And these things take time.
Yeah.
And if you're rushing, no wonder so many people are being sued in the UK. Slow down. No wonder mental health is rife and people are so stressed. Slow down. It's happening in fashion, it's happening in restaurants, it's happening in hotels, it's happening in lifestyle choices. Yeah. Slow down. Now, yeah, the second one, no pain. So I've heard also of what you call turntable anesthesia. So the patient comes in, gets an anesthetic, goes out to the waiting room, and, you know, so the doctor can see more patients, which is, I personally think, a public health scandal. I think any doctor doing that should be ashamed and should stop. And if they want to argue that point with me publicly in a public forum and you want to be the debate, set it up, Jenna. You find me one dentist that wants to tell me why they do that and why it's good to do that or acceptable to do that, I will have that discussion publicly, all right? Because it's not proper. Moreover, COVID, because Slow Dentistry was developed 2015, 16, the .com was registered in 2010, but basically before COVID, people didn't really care about disinfection. But if a patient comes into a room and for what, like, let's say has a filling done or whatever, yeah? And there's aerosols and there's had an extraction and a filling done for whatever reason, there's blood spatter, there's saliva, there's aerosols and contaminants. It's called disinfecting the operatory, not tidying the operatory. So no matter what kind of a practice you have, it's impossible to do so in 2 or 3 minutes. It's impossible to, it's impossible. So if you're seeing 30 patients a day with an interval of 5 minutes in between, and even 5 minutes is rushing,
yeah,
I don't think people are doing it. So moreover, if you're doing turntable anesthesia, how long did you disinfect the chair? Oh, we just wiped it down. Seriously? Is that how you want to help people? So One of the highlight good things that the COVID highlighted was the importance of proper disinfection. So, and I get back to the anesthesia. Don't rush your anesthesia. Some teeth take more time, and every patient has a right to a pain-free treatment. And sometimes the only vector that will change that isn't more anesthetic, is more time. All right? So that's the second one. The third one is always use a rubber dam on all of your root canal treatments. Children, geriatrics, people with Parkinson, people that, you know, in a wheelchair. There's no excuse. I've spoken to over 50 world-leading endodontists, and each one says that there's no excuse. Only excuse, save time to save money. So if you're not doing, and we on Slow Dentistry, we say root canals, but we'd also like to say deep restorative restorations. I understand that on a superficial class one or in a superficial class five, partial isolation works fantastic. But if you're in dentine, deep dentine, you should also be wearing a rubber dam. You know, if you're cementing full arch veneers or crowns, I think that if you're doing partial isolation as well and you're trying to keep things as dry as possible, some people will use a rubber dam. In many cases we do, some cases we can't, but at least in individual restorative dentistry and root canals, for sure, rubber dam. And last but not least, proper disinfection, as we've discussed, in between treatments. Now, the good thing about this, Jana, is you don't need any technology to do it, to become a slow dentist. You don't need any courses. Oh, where can I take a course in slow dentistry? Did you go to school? Yeah, then just do what you were taught. Yeah, but my boss doesn't allow me to use a rubber dam because he says I have to change your boss's mind or quit. Yeah, but no, I mean it. Change your boss's mind or quit and start a revolution. Start a revolution. How? Teach the public. That's what. So Slow Dentistry, as a nonprofit, our members pay to join. Anywhere between €99 for a hygienist, €199 for a single dentist, and €299 for a clinic. And that's per year. So it's not very expensive. And if you come from a non-OECD country, so emerging markets, it's 40% cheaper. So like clinics in, you know, Latin America, Africa, so on and so forth, it's actually cheaper because we want to help those countries more than ever to do this. So I don't want there to be an excuse that, oh, I come from a poor country, I can't practice safely. I think that the poorer part of society actually needs the first time round to be well done. Yes. Because their money is so hard to make, you know. So somebody saves us some money to go have a filling done, please do it right. Because otherwise, 10 years later, it's going to go into a root canal. 10 years after that, an extraction and an implant. And if the NHS had any proper, I'm sorry, I'm actually friends with people that run it. So I don't mean any disrespect. It's an impeccable service that helps a lot of people. But if you just get it right the first time, you will save billions 10 years down the line.
Sure.
Go slow. And plus, for young dentists starting out, to be forced into an environment that goes against what they learned must create a lot of mental anguish. So again, slowdentistry.com, anybody can sign up as long as they've got a license and they're practicing and they believe in these cornerstones and are committed to help. We use the money to promote to the general public. And that's something that's very different. So we promote these cornerstones to the general public as if they were, let's call them the human rights, the basic human rights of a patient. Because most dental societies focus on the dentist's rights and obligations and knowledge. Who's taking care of the patient? And these four cornerstones are ubiquitous. Nobody in their right mind will argue them. Everybody agrees with them. So why are so many people not doing it? It's to save time, to make money. Those days have to be over, and hopefully they have their days counted. We've got a lot of great global ambassadors. I know you're doing your work, and I think next year we have to discuss bringing you on board as one as well.
Well, after this, I'm going to contact your sister and sign on straight away. I'll tell you that. Two things I wanted to touch up on before our final segment here. One of the things was, speaking on celebrities, you treat probably the most famous person in the world. I've had the pleasure of meeting him twice in my studies in Valencia. One time was his leaving party in Opium Madrid before he moved. One time was in Valencia as well. Pretty embarrassing experience, actually. We all sat down for a dinner one night, and the waiter came up to me and goes, "What would you like to drink?" And I said, "No, nothing, I'm okay." Because I know I need to drink something. I was like, "Okay, give me a vodka Coke." The waiter then comes back down with two huge bottles of vodka and lots of Coke were coming in. And he's like, "Well, who ordered this?" And he pointed at me, and he doesn't even know me. So I put my head down embarrassed. I was like, oh, God.
Amazing.
When you meet a celebrity, all of these waiters and everyone's just trying to be like, you know, he's got money, right? But that obviously in dentistry as well. How is it like treating someone like that, of that level of fame?
Maybe you're talking about who? Because
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, again, I've been my patient for 12 years now. I don't talk, but I'm a big fan. Just of his work ethic, his principles, his, you know, I think I tend to treat all my famous patients the same. And again, one of the things I'm most proud of the White Clinic is that we have serious, you know, we have a few billionaires. We have, we have about 12 billionaire patients. About 50% of my clients fly in. Now, of course, with COVID, it's different. It's a lot of high net worth individuals, actors, celebrities, you know, pop stars, all of that. And when some old lady from down the road, a little old lady who's, you know, our client, we don't change for anybody. So perhaps with those people, you don't want to have so many people in the clinic because of the confusion it generates. But we don't really change. And it's a sign to the quality of a business if you don't have to change your protocols for the ultra famous. And I think that's a good concept for you guys in your clinic. Just make sure that everybody's a VIP. That's the first thing. Treat everybody with the same level of respect. And I think that's what they like at the end of the day. But, you know, I turn that part of my brain off with celebrity. I think he posted something on his Instagram 2 years ago where he said, "Thanks, buddy. You know, we don't talk about it." So for 10 years, it was funny because there was a lot of people saying they were his dentist and I was just quiet about it. And remember, celebrities come to the, you know, imagine being a gynecologist to the stars. You know, you're not going to put a photograph. So dentistry is also kind of a private thing. It's a very sacred thing. And I used to do a lot of photographs but I think nowadays they really love the fact that you're keeping it private, you know, and they love that very much. We live in an era where privacy is king. So that's why keep your mouth shut. And that's very, very important. And it's something I've always done. So I've never spoken about it. So it's okay. Yes, it's public, he is, but I won't say what we did or ever. It's private.
And from that, you know, that he's obviously very happy. And with the slow dentistry movement and the middle box smiles, you speak about, you know, how these patients then go on to their family and friends and refer them. And happiness as well is a big theme for my audience with, you know, your podcast being Secrets to Success. And I picked something up on your YouTube videos that you provide deep, transformative happiness through dental care. And I always think that, you know, happiness is reality minus the expectations, right? So I want to ask you, how should we set up patients' expectations? I mean, we all have expectations. I have them, listen to this podcast too. When people invest in their job or a clinic, they would have expectations, but patients have their expectations when they visit a dentist. What is your take on how we should form, set, and create patients' expectations when they come there and, you know, take them through the journey?
I'm going to tell you something right now. That was one of the best structured questions anybody's ever asked me. Congratulations, John. No. Your respect, man. It's a very good question. There's several ways. And the first one is honesty. Absolute honesty. Turn your patient into a partner, not into a client. When you treat your patient like a client, like how much am I going to make? When things go wrong, you will have a client relationship. If you turn them into a partner, you will have a partner relationship, which is a lot healthier. Partners tend to collaborate for solutions. Clients tend to complain and want their money back.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. And how do you turn a client into a partner? Education. You make them a stakeholder of your business. Somebody the other day said to me, "Is it true that Dr. Stanley spends, you know, an hour and a half talking to his first appointments?" And I was like, well, that's the minimum. Usually it's 2-3 hours. I give lectures to my patients. I bring them in. This is my office. They sit down. We have tea. Everything's, you know, paid for. You know, if somebody's shopping around for a free first appointment, they're visiting the wrong practice. So, you know, my first appointment is well charged for. The clinic charges a decent price for that. So my time is being covered. And I teach them. I make them understand the difference, not just the cost, but the value of things. And I show them around the clinic. I show them my dental lab. I say, that machine cost 100,000 euros. That cost 60,000 euros. That cost 50,000 euros. This is Japanese ceramic. Just this costs 400 euros. And I make them touch the things that they're going to interact with. My CBCT machine, 180,000 euros. The software costs 20,000 euros. This laser costs 60,000 euros. And all of a sudden, they're like, well, why are you telling me this? You're about to find out. All right? So I want them to understand. And a lot of dentists, what they mistakenly do is, here's my car that costs 200,000 euros. Here's my watch that costs 100,000 euros. Here's my $3,000 suit. Here's my clinic in the most expensive rental space in the planet. And that they're going to impress. No, no, that doesn't impress patients. Because the second, excuse my language, the shit hits the fan. I'm paying for all of this. And in my case, yeah, you are. Do you understand the difference? So it's very structured thinking. No disrespect to having a clinic in the best, you know, best part of the world, but make them understand that, you know, they're going to have to pay for that. It's not, you know, there's a fee for these things. Moreover, using softwares, you know, digital smile design, doing mock-ups and going really slow in your treatment planning, taking photographs, documenting everything, having somebody on. I have a team members that all they do is they take photographs. So if anything goes wrong, we backed up. Our backup plan has a backup. Moreover, never hide anything. You know, you're not responsible for your patient's health issues, you know, so really explain the whole treatment plan. So, for example, imagine you've got a patient that's got a huge cyst on a molar and they want an implant there. You don't say, oh, it's super easy. We're going to take it out. We're going to place an implant and a crown and you'll be fine. That took me, what, 20 seconds. I'll probably take an hour to explain and take out the bone. Most probably I won't have bone. I want a bone. No, you want a bone, but it's normal. Look at the CT scan. No, no, no. So you're going to have to graft with the bone. Oh, that sounds awful. Well, if the patient really freaks out, I don't want to treat them. Yeah. Remember, no off smiles. Say no. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. And then I explain guided bone regeneration, 6 months. 6 months? Well, unless you're an alien and your biology works faster than everybody else's, here's some literature to go and read. If you're not comfortable with that, here's the address to my competition. Go and visit that doctor. Pass the headaches to your competition. I do that actually, by the way. Yeah, he's great. Go for it. Not that competition. It's all relative, I guess. I'm in love with everybody. I'm an old man now. I've reached a point where I'm just happy that everybody's getting along. With that said, you explain all of the challenges you're going to have. And, oh, by the way, my implant might fail. What do you mean my implant might fail? Well, there's a 4% possibility that your implant might not integrate. But I'm going to have a tooth on the same day? No. What do you mean I'm going to have a space there? Yes. So paint it black, quoting Rolling Stones, in the very, very first appointment. And quote them for all of the possible failures that might arise. Now, younger generations will say, yeah, but that will scare them away. What if they go? Good. But if they stay, you will never have another headache in your life.
And now just moving on to our very final part of the interview. Thank you again so much for your time. I'm just going to ask you 5 quick questions and, you know, just one sentence or two if you could answer them.
Shoot.
My first question is, what is, throughout your life and throughout your career, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Go slow. My father on his dying bed. Go slow.
Okay. And what is the biggest mistake we make as humans?
Rushing.
Okay. What is one thing you're trying to learn this year?
Meditate.
Okay. And if you could get everyone in the world to practice one law, what would it be?
Kindness.
Okay, it's going to keep going, just a few more. The hardest part about my job is?
Myself.
Okay.
As human beings, we have ups and, you know, we have ups and downs. It's normal. We're not always at 100%, you know. Mm-hmm. An athlete might go onto the pitch and play for 90 minutes. We go and play for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have good and bad days. So as you get older, you try and, you know, and dentists, we need to stop thinking of ourselves as just doing a job. We're high performance athletes. Our brain, our physical condition, you know, we need to stay fit. We need to eat healthy. You know, focus on your health, or what you eat, when you eat, how you eat, stay super fit. So focusing on yourself, you know, because your only limitation is yourself. So if you love yourself and you take care of yourself and you want to heal yourself and you can forgive yourself, you can be a lot more productive.
Sure. That's great. And in life, you've learned many lessons. What would you say working hard comes from?
I have two answers. One is drive. That was the word that came to my head, drive. And the second one is, what else am I going to do?
Well, one thing I wanted to ask is, obviously you yourself, I don't look at you as just a dentist. You're also a lecturer, an entrepreneur. You've done many great things and you created an environment and space for a lot of other dentists to be able to accomplish the same things you have as well. What would you say, however, that it takes reset skills or, you know, qualities of someone that needs to have to become a successful dentist or entrepreneur like yourself?
Integrity, yeah. Honesty, and generosity. Two people mm-hmm. open a tea shop serving muffins and tea. One puts extra jam, beautiful custard or whatever on his, at the risk of making less profit at the end of the month. Which one do you think will attract a bigger crowd? Generosity is a huge key to success. Be kind and be generous to your patients.
Love that. Where can all of our listeners find out more about you? We know about slowdentistry.com, Dr. Miguel Stanley on Instagram. Is there any other thing that you're promoting that we can be of service to you?
Well, first of all, thank you. Nope, I don't do courses. I don't do, I don't sell stuff. I'm just very passionate about quality and ethics. So thank you for promoting Slow Dentistry, this nonprofit foundation. We appreciate all your help.
Sure. Thank you so much. And for all of our listeners tuning in, make sure that, you know, the lessons you've learned today from today, please share. Let us know what you've learned. Tag Dr. Miguel Stanley. And I hope you've enjoyed it. And again, Dr. Miguel Stanley, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. We're going to come back soon. You're an amazing interviewer. Thank you. I wish you all the success. Thank you.